While Joe Kennedy was grooming his sons for the White House and the Senate, his Stanford-educated daughter, Eunice, was tapping her father's fortune and her family's political power to engineer one of the great civil rights movements of our time on behalf of millions of children and adults with intellectual disabilities. In her new book, Eunice, Pulitzer Prize winner Eileen McNamara brings Eunice Kennedy Shriver out from her brother's shadow to give us the first definitive look at a woman often described as formidable, but whose complicated nature defies easy categorization. She was a career woman who vigorously defended the role of motherhood in American society, a cigar-smoking Washington dealmaker who started out wanting to become a nun, and above all, a crusader for the intellectually disabled, who arguably leaves the most profound legacy of the Kennedy clan. The name of the new book is Eunice, the Kennedy Who Changed the World. It is published by Simon & Schuster, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Eileen McNamara to the roundtable this morning. Eileen, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Given that you were going to spend a lot of time with this subject when you write a biography, what is it about Eunice Kennedy that said, oh, this is someone I would be interested in spending time with?
Well, I didn't know I'd be spending quite as much time with her as I did. It took quite a long time to go through all of her private papers. And I learned so much that I didn't know at the outset. But I think I was attracted to her because it is just too easy to write women out of history. And she always fascinated me when I was a reporter at the Boston Globe. And it seemed to me she never got the attention she deserved.
The subtitle, The Kennedy Who Changed the World, at what point during the research process did you realize that was the case?
I'd say pretty early on. She had a remarkable impact on the civil rights movement that basically made us recognize the rights of children with intellectual disabilities. I mean, before Jack Kennedy became president, and there was very, very little of federal money invested in helping those children. And the money that was invested in the Kennedy administration happened because Eunice pushed him to do it.
What was her relationship with her mother and father, and really her place in that very large family with a lot of boys looking for a lot of power?
A lot of boys who got a lot of power.
Right.
I think she's almost in some ways the classic middle child. She was number 5 of 9, and she didn't quite fit in with the glamorous older trio of Kick and Joe and Jack. She was paired by her mother with her sister Rosemary, who had been born with mild intellectual disabilities. She often got seated at the children's table with her younger siblings. She was pretty much lost in the middle there until she just asserted herself at a very early age to say, "Daddy, look at me." She wrote a wonderful letter to her father in the late 50s saying, "You're spending so much time on other people's careers in this house. What about me?" And she knew the answer to that question was, "You're a girl." And she just did not get the attention that the boys did.
The relationship that she had with her older sister, Rosemary, you write about, and it's a fascinating, beautiful relationship. What was it like for her to, because they are so close and then they are separated for a long time?
They are. And we don't know when she learned what really happened to Rosemary. When Rosemary was 23, her father had her lobotomized in a misguided attempt to cure the mental illness that compounded her intellectual disabilities. She had begun to have violent mood swings, to lash out at people, including people in the family. So misguided as it was, he compounded his own error, Joe Kennedy, I would say, by insisting that the family have no contact with her. So I don't think that Eunice knew where Rosemary was until 1949. And she didn't bring her back into the heart of the family until Joe's voice was finally silenced by a stroke in 1961.
And it was almost immediate that was something that she had obviously been thinking about for a long time, that when her father either passed or was gravely ill, that she would go get her sister.
Yes, and she did it on the public stage in a very dramatic way. Joe Kennedy had his stroke, which left him unable to speak in December of 1961. And it's no coincidence that in September of 1962, she published an article in Saturday Evening Post, which basically told the world that Rosemary had born with what we then called mental retardation. She did not confide in the country that her sister had been lobotomized, but she did write about her intellectual disabilities and the impact it had on the family. And that was a secret that Joe had kept very, very close in order not to compromise his son's political careers.
Looking at her own career, she worked for the State Department. She worked there 2 years before Jack arrived on Capitol Hill, then ran a task force on juvenile delinquency in the Justice Department well before Bobby tackled the issue as Attorney General. So she certainly worked with a lot of people on a lot of issues, almost paving the way, if you will, for her brothers to follow.
I think one of the things that really struck me about learning about her life was how often on important issues of the day, she got there first. And she identified for them social problems that they didn't identify themselves with. And she, you think about Camp Shriver, which she started in the backyard of her beautiful estate in Maryland in 1962. She brought all these children from institutions and who were hidden away at home with intellectual disabilities to, you know, swim in her swimming pool, to ride her horses, to provide a summer camp for them. That camp was integrated. Many, many of those children were African-American children. In 1962, that was pretty unusual in Maryland. And Jack and Bobby were not there on race as early as she was.
When you look at those views, how do you think they were formed, her political views?
Well, I think they all grew up very privileged and very spoiled in lots of ways. But the ethic of giving back and public service was deep in the Kennedy DNA. And she wanted to participate just as the boys were doing in the political process. We think of her and her legacy as being about Special Olympics, which was the outgrowth of Camp Shriver from her backyard. But it was really much deeper than that. She changed the way America looked at these children. By putting them on the playing field, she said, look, they're just like other children. They just want to play. They just want to learn. It's hard to remember that until 1975, a child with intellectual disabilities didn't have a right to a seat in a public school classroom. They have that right because of Eunice. She worked the back quarters of Capitol Hill way better than her brothers did. I mean, she and Teddy made a formidable pair in her later years. But in the 60s, she was the one running things on the Hill.
Was it frustrating for her? I mean, did she want to enter politics?
Oh, I think she would have been thrilled if in 1946 her father had tapped her instead of Jack to run in the 11th Congressional District in Massachusetts. She was often sent out to speak for Jack. Jack, when he started, was a really awkward public speaker. She was an extremely confident public speaker. So she often gave speeches in his stead. But it just wasn't to be. Partly it was the times. You know, there weren't a lot of women in public office. But it was mostly the ethic of that family in which power went to men.
One of the interesting parts of the book is you write about her being a mom and the complex relationship that she had being a mother.
I mean, she would write pieces during the early days of feminism in women's magazines about how the feminist movement was devaluing motherhood, which she saw as, you know, a great role for women. But in fact, in her own life, she was a consummate career woman. She was very rarely at home, and the kids very rarely knew where she was. She wasn't a particularly warm and affectionate mother, but as Maria Shriver told me, she couldn't give what she didn't get. Rose was not a warm and nurturing mother. So I think she replicated that in her own family. Now, it's interesting when you see the Shriver children, they are all very effusive and emotional with their own children. They didn't follow in their mother's footsteps. They followed in their father's, who was a very, very kind of maternal presence in their house.
How close was she to becoming a nun?
She was really close to becoming a nun. It was her passion to enter the convent. She dated Sergeant Shriver for 7 years, and she resisted all of his proposals for all of those 7 years. And finally, Joe Kennedy called Father Ted Hesburgh out at Notre Dame. And Father Hesburgh, who of course became the president of Notre Dame, sat Eunice down at Joe's behest and told her that she did have a vocation, but her vocation was to marry Sergeant Shriver and have his children. And when I asked Father Hesburgh about that story, it's a story he told friends and fellow priests for years, but he would never say on the record. And when he did put it on the record with me, he said he didn't feel badly about it because she knew how much Sarge adored Eunice and how much Eunice respected and loved in a larger way Sergeant Shriver for his commitment to social justice. And they shared this incredible Catholic faith.
Of course, great tragedy in the family with the assassinations of two of her brothers. What was that like for her, and how did she go through those very emotional times?
Well, you know, the death of Jack and Bobby, you know, followed the deaths of Joe Jr. and Kathleen. I mean, Kathleen was killed in 1948 in a plane crash. Her oldest brother was killed during World War II. And Rosemary had essentially been lost to the family during the 40s as well. So I think tragedy was not an unfamiliar feeling for that family. And they all were devout Catholics. And their attitude was, you look forward, you don't look back, you take the pain and you channel it into social action, into work. And the children will tell me that she never, ever discussed the assassinations of her brothers with them. They had trouble remembering how they even learned it because their mother flew to Hyannisport right away after Jack was killed to be with her parents. And the kids were left at home with babysitters.
Which is just so hard to understand given the violence of both acts, of both deaths of her brother.
Right. I think that it was a kind of a denial that is deep in the DNA of this family, that when bad things happen, you don't dwell on them. You push forward. Because if you do dwell on them, you may be stuck there in that grief. So whether it's resilience or it's repression, it served them well. I mean, they went on with their lives.
And she certainly did go on with her life. Talk a little bit about Camp Shriver and the seeds of this and what ultimately would become much of her legacy.
Well, I think a lot of her legacy is it's the legislation that's been passed. Everything from the IDEA Act, which guarantees these children a right to an education, to the Americans with Disabilities Act. All of those pieces of federal legislation have Eunice's fingerprints on them. The Special Olympics is an extraordinary achievement. It may sound bold to describe her as the Kennedy who changed the world, but look at that legacy. In more than 170 countries, including the former Soviet Union, including China, South Africa, children who were locked away and hidden, just as they once were in this country, are celebrated. Their parents, you know, come out to fields and arenas to watch them compete, and they're accepted as part of society. And that's an enormous legacy. It's one of the great civil rights legacies of the 20th century, and she owns it more than anyone.
So talk a little bit about the Special Olympics and that part of the legacy and what ultimately has been left behind and how people see her through this incredible organization.
Well, I think, you know, she built on the work of parents' groups that had come before her in the 1950s when there was really nothing for these children. Parents' groups organized all over the country to try to get them the services they need, to get them an education, to get them recreation. What Eunice did was she threw her family's fortune and her famous name behind those efforts. And she was able to do what parents' organizations on their own couldn't do. And in some ways, she is really ultimately her father's child. Joe Kennedy shaped the way we look at the Kennedy family by his very strategic use of public relations. He marketed his family to America. They're American royalty. Well, she did the same thing. Whether you're looking at the first Catholic president or a child with intellectual disabilities, you have to begin with how you perceive them. And she changed the way we look at these children. So today we embrace them. We still have much further to go, of course. But that was just a dramatic, dramatic change in public attitude.
Do you think she enjoyed being in the spotlight of being a Kennedy?
Oh, yeah, I think she loved it. And I think she would have loved the attention even more if she got the credit in her own lifetime that I think she deserved. In 2007, the Kennedy Library in Boston had an evening to celebrate her achievements. And she was gritting her teeth when she took the podium to say, "It's wonderful after all these years of celebrating the boys that you've decided finally to recognize one of the women." I think she felt that it had been a struggle, a hard fight. One of the things she said in that speech was, "I was told all my life real power was not for me." And because she didn't listen, she took the power that her father wouldn't give her. She just took it, and she changed the world.
The name of the book is Eunice, The Kennedy Who Changed the World. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Eileen McNamara, great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us.
Delightful to talk to you.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Eunice, The Kennedy Who Changed the World. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.